Welcome back to the Explicit Measures Podcast with Tommy, Seth, and Mike. Hello, everyone. Welcome back.
Good morning and happy Tuesday, gentlemen. It's a happy, happy Tuesday.
Man, I am waiting for you to do that while losing your breath because, man, we are really...
You want me
really...
to keep extending it?
I'm wondering how strong the lungs are.
Oh, dude, this is like maybe a quarter of how long.
Look, I've been friends with Seth for a long time. He's full of hot air.
Facts.
Based. That's a based comment.
Facts.
I don't even
like DiCarlo, right?
I don't even know what based. I don't know what based things mean anyway. I feel to say it all the time on the YouTubes.
I'm looking for the increased engagement then.
Yeah, there you go.
Excellent. Our main topic for today is we are going back through the implementation planning documentation presented by Microsoft. Wow, that sounded like an advertisement if I've never heard one. That was pretty good. Welcome back. Friday. Whatever the... Actually, it's Tuesday.
There you go.
We're going back to BI solution planning. And so we're going to talk more about the solution planning portion of this episode. I guess it's kind of the BI strategy. BI strategy has been broken down into overview planning, tactical planning, and now solution planning. So this is kind of the last part of the BI strategy. There's a couple more topics. We may do one or two more episodes depending on how many people like these videos, and we may do a couple more. So let us know in the comments below or tell us what sections you'd like us to cover in any future episodes if you want us to keep going. Or if you're bored, we can just move on to some other stuff. We'll talk about other, you know, memes or something we find on the internet that's funny. All right. That being said, we do have a couple intros and openers today. So first off, I want to just let everyone know, if you're not signed up for the conference, Microsoft's really pushing the Azure Data Conference or azuredataconf.com. This is the Microsoft Fabric Conference that they're doing. You can register on their website, and you can. The main conference goes from March 26th to the 28th. There are workshops the 24th and 25th, the pre-con, and they have a post-con as well on the 29th. And if you want $100 off your registration, use Carlo100 for $100 off your registration and come see us in Las Vegas. I don't know if you guys are going. You guys plan on attending this year or not yet?
Mm-mm. I'm getting closer and closer to thinking about it. There's a few things. It's the last week in March, right? Yeah. So
yeah, it's getting... March has gotten pretty busy.
I know. So maybe I'll make a surprise visit.
That's amazing. All right. So hopefully we'll see you in Las Vegas talking about fabric things and going through a lot of stuff there as well. I'm talking at two sessions. I have one on data flows and one on Spark and AI stuff. So come check me out. Say hello if you are going out to Las Vegas. All right. Tommy, you have another intro opener here. And you'll notice that today, for those of you who are watching on YouTube, I do have a scarf on today. So
it's not my intro. This is my friend. This is all you.
That's true. But I mean, so, it's kind of, you wanted to bring up the point.
Oh yeah. I happen to say that I love the fact that you went to France and Europe, and now for the first time ever, you're sporting a scarf
on the podcast. You know what?
It's very, very French, like just very European of you.
Very, very French of you. I love that. To be perfectly honest, it was in my backpack. I was cold. I pulled it out and threw it in my neck, and I was like, oh, this is comfortable. And I just forgot to take it off before we do the video. So, I went over to Oslo to Fabric February, where I was able to speak over there in the conference. Myself and Ben Ferry did not impromptu, we planned it, but it was like a Q&A open question answer session during lunchtime. People got down and were coming downstairs, grabbing their lunch and their food. And we just took random questions from the audience and just kind of did a interactive. Ben Ferry on his YouTube channel, the Power BI guy, does a great job of just kind of open conversation with other experts across the Power BI industry. Ask them questions. They just kind of have candid conversations. It doesn't have to be data related. It could be other things related, but it's just kind of a fun conversation around getting to know people through video. So anyways, we decided we wanted to do that same kind of feel and event inside the Fabric February conference. So we had a fortunate ability to help out there. We also helped out in like the community area, asked questions, talked to people who were visiting, just generally said hi. And it was a great event, really well done. Would try again. So if you hear of another Fabric February coming out from the Oslo team, Catherine, Marta, and I think there's another lady who was running it, did a great job. So super good event, really enjoyed it, would definitely recommend it. And that's where scarf came from.
Cool.
Just unpacking from the bag.
That's good. And that's a whirlwind trip.
Yeah, we went to Paris all up to Oslo for the conference.
So. I get to see Ben Fieri. Ben Fieri's the man, man. Like,
he's hilarious. Yeah. He's easy to talk to. I think he told me that he was once a, I think this was right. I have to make sure I fact check this. While we're talking, he told me he used to be a steward on an airline.
What?
Yep. And I feel like when you're
past lives we all have,
I feel like you kind of like, there are people's like parts of their career. You're like, what were you doing?
Yeah.
Like you're in data now. Like you're not. And I find it's very interesting. The people that, there are certain parts of your career that kind of shape your personality a little bit, or maybe your personality mm-hmm. shapes part of what you want to do. But I feel like being that person in an airline serving people, you have to have a very outgoing personality. You have to be able to read people, I think, pretty well. And I feel Ben reads people really well.
Yeah. I would suggest, and this is coming from obviously having the experience, but I think a stint in the service industry is probably some of the best training you can get. So as when you're younger, shoot for a service like waiting,
yeah,
bartending.
Well, you did waiting too, Seth, steward, right? That was part of your
and bartending. Yeah, I was in
bartending
restaurant business for a long time, and man, yeah, just the myriad of personalities, the
how to strike a conversation,
choking down angry words.
Oh yeah.
Being treated, you know, not nice, and just
working through it.
Sir, really appreciate that.
Slogan is, you're not going to enjoy it, but you're going to learn from it.
Right. So. Yeah. I mean, just invaluable lessons.
Maybe this all funnels into why we're so good at doing Power BI and working with the business all the time, because we're like, I have words to say, but I'm restraining from saying them to you.
I had someone when I worked at Cold Stone, they said, all right, they put a dollar in there, like, sing for me, monkey. I'm like, oh,
wow.
Are you serious?
I mean, wow. There are points in time
where
one might just say,
wow,
thank you for stopping in. There's the door.
There's the door.
There's the door.
Let me add something to your ice cream. Oops, I just dropped it on the floor. I'm sorry about
that. You say, are you allergic to nuts? Okay. Make sure we avoid that.
I perfected my entertainment business at Cold Stone. I could flip those spatula, those spoons. Mm. Oh man.
Does it come back to you, Tommy? Like if I gave you some spatulas now, could you like bang on the table like ding 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 and throw it in the hand? And you could do it, you could still do it.
I could catch a brownie with the best of them.
Oh man.
Yeah,
I'm thinking this might have to be a special episode of walking into a Cold Stone and seeing if we can get Tommy behind the bar
The part that I'm not telling you is I'm as clumsy today as it was back then.
Oh no! So you lost a lot of ice cream. I could throw you. So you were fired because all the ice cream went up on the floor.
I think I gotta get fired, but.
But to your point, Seth, I will say, I think it is very useful for people to do this. And my kids have been watching all kinds of YouTube videos and they're venturing out. We have the Dude Perfect app on our Apple TV. And there's a new creator that just got added there. I don't know his name yet. But my son's watching him and he has this challenge. He's trying to go across the United States selling random things and trying to earn money to be able to get a flight, be able to fly someplace else. And so one of the things he does is to make money, he buys a thing of water bottles and goes out to like a park and just sells them to people. He buys a 24 pack for like, I don't know, 50 cents on the bottle. And then he can go sell them for $1 or $2 for a bottle and people will buy it. And I told my son, I said, I should challenge you to this. We'll see who can sell here. We'll both buy 24 packs and whoever can sell the most amount of water on this, that's the challenge. And he's like, that's so awkward. Why would you ever want to do that? And I thought to myself, this is a really valuable skill. If you can being able to sell and convince people what you have is worthwhile. I mean, what we do in business, we do this so often. I'm like, this is a really valuable skill to have, like to be able to do that.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. Another great analogy is I was just talking to some friends over the weekend And I live in a smaller area, a lot of smaller town now. And there's only so many bars in the realm. And there's one in particular that is probably the most traveled by spot, one of the most traveled by.
Yeah.
And they've been renovating it for at least 2 years.
Wow.
And it's always empty. And my friend says, because every time he goes in there, he's like, I give it a shot every three to six months. And every time he walks in, someone behind the bar looks at him and goes, "What?" Like, that's how he's
seriously
every time. And it's just like there's you compare that to some of the more successful places that aren't in that spot, that aren't as nice, and they're packed. Why?
Wow.
Because there's personality behind the bar.
Yep.
There is social. It's a fun place to be. And it's just like the difference between
interesting.
Just because you have something doesn't mean you have the ability to sell it. Just because you have skills doesn't mean you're going to be great on your own if you can't sell yourself. So it's a great skill, because can you sit in your cooler, you know, and have 24 ice cold waters underneath you?
Yep.
With a little sign that says $1. Yeah. But if you're not pitching it, oh man, it is hot.
You're sweating. Hey, you're working hard.
You're looking hot. Ooh, come on over. I got $2 water for you right now. Right. Mm-hmm. Place and time. Convenience. Yeah. Little wordsmithing, right?
I see the little YouTube video.
A huge difference.
I see that little YouTube video of like, sell me this pen.
Yes.
And then it's like those kind of all these little that's a good 1 minute video.
Can you imagine, like, and to your point, to your son, right?
Yeah.
If somebody walks up and you're like, "What? You think you're gonna sell
it? You're gonna sell anything? Yes.
Sell water? No." Yeah. They're just gonna be like, "Never mind.
Yep, see ya." Anyways, I feel like these are some really good life skills that people should learn, and learn how to sell things, learn how to market yourself, learn how to like convey, have that softer side of things. And that's probably like a whole podcast by itself, just talking about like the softer skills of Power BI.
And I'm not going to lie. I don't think it's a long walk from what we're having the conversation here to honestly our first step in solution planning.
Just a short pier. It's a long walk off the short pier.
It's not too far of a walk, honestly, because I went through some of the documentation, and I was trying to think about it from a different context.
Okay.
Like actually being in there. So I won't get too far ahead of myself, but
okay,
there's a lot here where it's customer service from our end that
like the central BI team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's very true.
Engaging the team itself. And there's a lot, I think we've spent, you know, up until this whole BI strategy conversation or walking through the documentation, we probably spent the most time in this area. So to for sure, the technical BI folks, this is a comfortable spot. We've talked a lot about these points. It'll be fun to walk through and whatnot, but it's the nuts and bolts, even for the business users, right? Like there's a lot of really great nuggets of all the steps that, you know, are involved in putting together a final product, right? And prior to this, we've been talking much more on a higher level, and this is where we start to get into the actual implementation, the nuts and bolts of things that are delivered to the business.
Well, what a good transition. So let's jump into the main article here. The link will be in the description of this video below, so make sure you check out the link in the description here. The article, this one, we're talking about the BI solution planning, and that's the portion here. And let's just kick off. This is the last phase of the three phases that are kind of talked about in the article: strategic planning, tactical planning, and then solution planning. And they kind of added a nice little pyramid icon that went along with this one. So strategic planning was the apex of the pyramid. The tactical planning is, what are we going to do? How are we going to define the results? OKR, all the things. And then, so that's the kind of the middle layer of the pyramid. And then the base of the pyramid is now solution planning. So kick us off, Tommy. Give us some initial thoughts or some overview of the article, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, and we're going to be focusing on the first step today, on gathering requirements.
Step one.
And step one in our solution planning and gathering requirements. We've talked about the strategic approach and tactical initiatives and solutions. And now it's like, okay, we have the idea, we have our goals. What solutions do we need to put in place, and how? Who's going to be involved? What are we going to do from a technical side from requirement gathering? What are we going to do from the business side of requirement gathering? The stakeholders need to be involved, in kind of an almost redundant fashion that we did in our first stage of our strategy planning. And now we really have to understand, what are the design scenarios? What are the existing solutions? And where do we need to get to? And that's at least the cover here. And I have a few thoughts, but I'll pause there just to get your guys' initial reactions.
I struggle with companies and thinking through how do we define the right requirements. And a lot of times I feel like working with people, they don't know what they want. They think they do, or they have assumptions about things that don't usually come true throughout the entirety of the project. So I feel like a lot of this is, okay, I'm going to liken this to a bad analogy probably. I liken gathering requirements is a game of Candyland, right? You keep picking out colors, you keep making progression, you get halfway through the board, and all of a sudden you pull out, what is it, Larry Licorice? I don't know what it is. It's the guy, the evil guy at the bottom right-hand corner of the board, and you get sent, like, you've gone through all these requirements, you've made progress, and all of a sudden you pull a wild card, and all these exceptions come out, and all these, like, well, what about this, and I need this, and this, and so you get set back, you get reset back, and you're not getting to the finish line. And so if you do a bad job of defining your requirements, it feels like you're in a never-ending game of Candyland, where you're constantly getting closer to the finish line, but you're never able to get there, and you keep resetting yourself by rebuilding things or refixing things or getting more requirements, or it wasn't really articulated to begin with. That's my general beef. Now, this may be just report requirements gathering. There's probably a lot of other requirements across this ecosystem we can talk about as well, but that's just kind of how I feel about, like, them from the report side. It's sometimes difficult to get people to align on the right requirements.
I would 100% agree with that.
And it's with the way your face expression was happening, I didn't know if I was off base. I think you were. I feel like I was getting the knitted eyebrows from you, Seth. No, I didn't know.
I started holding onto my desk. I was.
I was waiting for the. Well, actually, I'm gonna disagree with you there.
I'm gonna go on mute and listen.
I've actually been very intentional lately, because a good friend of mine actually was talking to me about some of my tells at work. Right, he's like, you always do this.
It's the eyebrows.
And then you engage, and then you always do this. And then I know it's coming, right? And we were talking about, like, what are different ways in meetings where you can see whether or not somebody's going to, you know, have a positive or negative reaction. Anyway, no, man, what I was doing on the side was getting reinforcing points to agree with you. Because one of the things that isn't outlined in the technical documentation that we've talked about, and I was looking up in, I think it first came in episode 231 when we were talking about data models, is this, and what I think would be a good addition to the technical documentation here, because it addresses what you're talking about, even as we go after requirements, and what the art, what this documentation breaks out is like the business side and the technical side, is I have started utilizing much more than I have in the past conceptual models. And that article, or what we talked about
earlier, they work really well.
Is to me the linking, the missing piece in a lot of that step by step stuff that we have in business requirements gathering. And once we have the business requirements, we start building the technical. What conceptual does is it lands us in a really comfortable spot with the business, where it's almost like taking the whiteboarding, but to another level, where we're talking about a lot of the different concepts. Hopefully they have opinions of requirements, but it's the framework by which we're starting the conversation, and we're always going to come back, because the conceptual model could be much larger than the thing we're going to build. And
I agree.
Your experience is maybe similar to mine from the standpoint. Well, I know it is. We've talked about.
We've talked about this before, I think.
And in the vein here, right, we have strategic planning, we have objectives, we have key results, like things that it's very granular. Like, there is a body of work. Everybody should know the topic that we're talking about, right?
Sure.
This isn't a random request coming from a business user. Mm-hmm. But in both cases, I think the conceptual model is a great starting point, because you can take all these high-level things, throw them all on whatever your thing, Visio, Lucid Chart, you know, mind map, whatever. And then start to articulate, great, here's the things we're going to tackle from a deliverable. This is the objective that we're going to solve. What does phase one look like? Okay, boom. Super high level, right? Just so everybody can think about these pieces together. And then you can start to like filter them down to a point where you're going to go, like, here's phase one, here's phase two, here's phase three. And that's been really helpful even for me in those conversations where it's like, okay, great. You want these things. Here's how, like, how that all works. Here's, you know, what we have to do. Here are the questions we're answering in this phase. Now we're going to answer the questions in this one. And it's just a great landing place. And then from there, you obviously get into the business requirements and you get into the technical where it's just like more granular views of that same conceptual conversation always. And if you want to go like traverse, I'm starting in technical. What was that again? Why are we doing this? Here's the business requirements. Here's the business logic that we're introducing, et cetera, et cetera. There's always this really nice tiered approach to re-engaging in the conversation whenever and wherever we're at.
I really like this comment. I'm not sure everyone will follow the difference between a conceptual model and a technical model. Is that what kind of you're differentiating between here? So maybe can you define conceptual model, and why is that different than a technical model?
Well, I'm going to get put on the spot here from a lack of specific definitions.
I'm just making sure because I think we're on the same page. But I'm just saying I think it would be just helpful because you brought the word out of like I know it, but I don't know if everyone understands like what that means.
Told them to go back to the episode.
Yeah,
well, maybe true.
Back up into the episode. But ultimately, what we're saying is, there are pieces to the discussion. Like we're going to go build something. We're going to connect to these sources, right? So I connect, like I have three bubbles. Here's my three sources of information. This is how it flows into, you know, the data storage. What we're going to do is add a whole bunch of logic here, and what this is going to generate is the output where we're going to create a bunch of different calculations. And on the opposite side of this, we're going to answer five questions in this way. And here's, I mean, if you want to break it to like the basics of the visuals, right? The pages, like here's how we're going to present this on a really high level here, you know, conceptually. We're going to answer the first two on this page where it's going to flow into this other page where we're going to show you this. And if you want to throw in some wireframes, cool, right? All it is a framework that any business user and any technical person can engage with and say, I don't understand what you were explaining here. And you can always go up to the conceptual model. Here's what we're doing in this bucket. Where it cascades is, okay, now that everybody is on the same solution, like we're on the same working frame in these pieces, what are the business elements that we need to be cognizant of, right? So this is where I think you get into, and we'll see if the technical documentation aligns with my description, but the business requirements are much more aligned with ensuring we have the business logic, all of the subject matter experts, you know, expertise of when we're extracting data, things we have to alter or modify, or rules we have to follow, etc. So in between there, we have much more of the context that's going to help the data engineer understand that as we build something, they can vet the code against the business logic in all these pieces. So it's going to be much more verbose. It's going to be pseudo-technical to some degree. Mm-hmm. But it's going to have the core pieces that the business still very much understands and is like the SMEs are really going to have a lot of input here where they're going to like, no, you have to filter this data out here and this is why and this is the accounts and this is blah, 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 right? Million and one conversations, a lot more documentation. Then from there, I think is that solid point where you get into technical where it's like, okay, here's the sale, here's, you know, the CRM, here's the, you know, fields that we're pulling, the ones that we care about that have business logic. Now, somebody give me the actual diagram. We're pulling these columns. Here's the data types. Here's what we're doing. Yes. This goes into, you know, the Databricks notebook. We're going to do it in Python. Da, 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 da. And it's all of the broken out like stuff you can just hand off to a data engineer and they go, got it.
Know right? how to do know how to
the
build connect, it.
The connections, the usernames, the password, like everything that they would need to go build something. So okay.
That's a great description of that. And I gotta cheat. I'm gonna be honest, Seth. I also cheated here as well. I tried to ask ChatGPT, what's the difference between? I love checking these questions, but it did a good job. It gave like a real example. Like, imagine a conceptual model of you going into an app and ordering some food. What would you do? Conceptual model would be like, open app, see nearby restaurants, select a restaurant, browse the menu, pick item and purchase. That's the conceptual model is like just the big, and I'm thinking in the data world, it'd be like, okay, we have customers, we have products. We want to know where customers buy products. Like, you kind of talk at that higher level to some degree and say, customer data lives in Salesforce.
Yeah.
Purchasing stuff lives in custom homegrown CRM system. So like, you can go through and figure those things out.
Yeah. But not even that, like, where the value of this to me is, I cannot tell you how many times I built a report, or you walk in and somebody else has built a report, and 6 months down the road, somebody wants to enhance it, or some sort of bug is reported. And the first question I always have is, well, what was it supposed to do? Right? You're telling me that a metric is wrong, but is it? What am I comparing that against? And I guess the thing that strikes me is, having like proper documentation of a model, sure, whatever. But if I have a conceptual model that just goes along every time with the things I'm building, well, now I have the frameworks. Now I can always like plug right into that and say, well, this is why we did this. Here's the questions that we're, answering with this thing. Here's why we decided to do that. And all of that is part of the engagement and disengagement and engagement for different phases of a particular project.
So I need to pause here because I'm struggling with something, and it goes to really the heart of, I think, when we started the podcast, we've talked about this in the real world. Everything you've said, I agree with in a vacuum here. And I'm going to kind of pause here because this is an exercise I want you guys to think about. This is now the third phase of planning that we're in. Think about the brain drain and the low fuel that your business is already on, all the meetings we've done to this point in an implementation, all the workshops, all the strategic research, how many times we met with the business.
This is a really good point.
And now we're getting to business requirements. And I've been in these conversations and I've been through trying to do this. You want to talk about trying to sell someone. If I'm showing a client or my team, hey, here's all the stuff we're going to do to implement Power BI, and now we're getting to gathering requirements at this, and I've showed them this documentation or the idea of trying to roll this out. This is much harder than selling a water bottle. When you think about the amount of time and effort the business has to go through to get to this point, again, in a vacuum, the gathering requirements from a single semantic model, yeah, great. But we've done a ton of work with the business and asked for a ton of work from the business as well, and their feedback and meetings and calls and hours to get now to business requirements. And now we have to now ask, almost feel like we're asking them the same questions now with requirements from technical and now the business. I don't know how many businesses have this much time, and if they're going to be willing to dedicate where we're at right now, not just the gathering requirements, but what everything we've done leading up to this, and that they're going to be game for that. And this is not just a bad data culture. This is a lot of organizations, because this is one technology to them, with the lack of understanding. Even if they have the understanding, we've done a ton of work. And this is where I'm struggling with this ideal scenario of implementation planning. But to get this many people on board for this long, for this amount of time, I don't know how well this works at this stage.
I think this is a fair question. But I'd also maybe argue, I'm trying to think of how I phrase this. I feel like this is after the tactical planning, and you're now honing in on like a specific thing. you know, you're now at the place where you're solving one part of the data model, right? Mm-hmm. You've gone we know we need three major models. We're now talking about how do we solution one of these models? What should that model be? What should be in that particular model? And you haven't gone into the details of that particular piece. I'm also thinking here too, like you in thinking about this, again, I would agree with you, Tommy, going through BI strategic planning, there's a lot of things in here. Like someone needs to go through and say, okay, I need to trim some fat on this. My organization is not going to hold up for 3 weeks of meetings. And then finally getting to like, now we're trying to deliver some solutions. I think in some cases you have to move faster through this process. I would agree with you because you can't lose interest. But then longer initiatives. I mean, this is where I struggle though, because some companies need to go through this quickly to start delivering value to get people to buy in. Other companies need to take more time to really go through this process and make sure they're really building the right thing because their customers really depend on it. An example of this would be, let's focus on the difference between internal reporting versus reporting that's going to your customers. You're probably going to take a bit more rigor around reports that go to your customers because it's representing your company as a brand. You're going to stylize the report more. You're going to have more feature requirements. You're going to actually really do research on what does the external customer need of their data and make sure you have that as a requirement up front, as opposed to internal reports where you can maybe get away with like, it doesn't be styled as much. You can probably get a model out quicker. Let's deliver something now and just see if this thing adds value, fail and fail fast, and then you can always come back and revise. So I feel like the type of product you're trying to produce changes and changes how much you want to invest in this planning or not. I don't know. Seth, any thoughts from your side?
Lots of them.
Just one.
Specifically, right? Like what I love, if you go to the top of this article, is there is a purple box that says note. And in there, it talks about Viva Engage and OKRs. Ultimately, right here, we're talking about the initiatives and solutions,
yeah.
Right? Are processes or tools built to help you achieve one or more key results. Those key results roll up to the objective. I get what you're saying, Tommy. And I think we're talking about it a lot more in detail than how fast it can go. Because it's very reminiscent to me of I don't know if these are the right terms, but a product life cycle or project life cycle, right? You will have a core group of people that are engaged in this cycle multiple different times all the time, right? Because we're helping create the objectives, right? When you have those objectives, you're helping create the key results that are going to matriculate and solve a business problem. So business intelligence and data and reporting and insights are extremely useful for organizations, primarily in efficiency or in revenue generation, right? I hear what your point is, but it's not like the entirety of the teams and technical resources are part of every single one of these phases, because they're not, right? Like decisions are made, yeah, I think, with a group of people. It matriculates down. Like you're only doing strategic planning on a quarterly basis, right? Like where you're going to create new objectives or crush them, then the tactical gets down to like the lower levels of like wherever. And yeah, if you have a huge wide audience and a ton of business units that are engaged and the BI COE is responsible for all that, you're cycling through this all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like, yes, brain drain-ish from that team, but like for the business, like it should be part of a cycle that exists, right? Related to we're grooming stories, we're grooming things with a team, and this is part of that, you know, requirements gathering to go build the solutions that are driving towards the, you know, key results and objectives that kind of roll up into the hierarchy of things that we're accomplishing across the board.
And I love that, because I think there needs to be more of an emphasis on those low-hanging fruits that we've talked about. Because if you were to realistically look at each of the items we've talked about in all the episodes, I'm being conservative saying maybe it's a month to get through that at an organization to try to plan them, write the results, get everyone on board with that, but probably more like 2 months if you think realistically. So my worry there is you've gone 2 months now and you have nothing tangible. You have goals and KPIs, but nothing anyone's touching yet.
You'd be surprised.
No, see, I mean, when you think about
I feel like I would disagree with that statement, though. Nothing tangible. I take a little issue with that. I think having the community of practice is important. I think documenting these sessions as they occur and some key notes from those items. I think writing those things down on the community of practice around here's our main focus for this quarter. Here's what we're going to go do. Here's what we're going to go build. I mean, I think, yes, I agree with you to some degree. It doesn't feel like we have a product. It's not a report or a model spitting out of this thing, but you have so much more like documentation and support. And I think this is really a catalyst for getting all the horses in the herd to like line up and kind of go the same direction. So I think if you have too many, too many chiefs and no Indians. I don't know what this phrase is. Too many cooks in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Whatever. I think if you get too many cooks in the kitchen, you start going so many different ways that you get distracted. And I feel like everything that we've been talking about from strategic to tactical has been making sure that we align everyone on the right direction. And we all agree what we're going to work on for a short period of time until we get something delivered. And then we pivot to the next thing before we switch. I don't think you can underestimate the value of that. And to your point, it doesn't feel like a lot, but I think nothing more will derail your organization faster than letting things just go run amok and everyone going different directions. Cause then you get all kinds of different answers and no one owns the data and everyone's pointing fingers at everyone. And there just seems to be a whole lot of not healthy culture that comes out of that.
Right. And I wholeheartedly agree. The problem is I don't know if always stakeholders will, because we have a list of what we're going to do and our objectives and our key results. Mm-hmm. But I've seen how many times we've heard, well, I can't do anything yet. Like there's nothing been done. I just have a list of these high and lofty great goals and the results we're going to measure it on. But up into this point in our implementation planning, if we were to follow it verbatim, step by step, there's nothing tangible, no product, no report, no center of excellence that actually has been created yet. We're actually now doing the requirement gathering.
That's not true at all.
Where?
In order to even start with this, you need the team.
Okay.
Right? That was one of the things we talked about report, or like where I got hung up, is you need the resources to go engage with the business because you're going to start making guarantees to the business. Very difficult to do that if you don't have a BICOE, or you don't have the resources to engage with the business units, or you don't have the resources to help them after you've had these discussions, or they are just on their own. So step, I think there's...
You're right. That's step one of strategic planning. Plan, workshop. No, step one is assemble the working team. Like there's people being aligned to like, this is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
So there's a lot we parse through. Strategic planning is something that I think happens on a much longer cadence, right? Like we're looking at a year. You should, of the 20 areas that we've identified across the organization to improve data literacy or the data culture, right? There's some high level objectives we want to hit. As those are defined, the next levels in strategic planning are to the point, right? The specific and measurable results that are going to make the most impact to the business. It's why you're focusing on those objectives first. To me, this is just like, yes, it's a big lift from if you've never done this before, thinking through all these pieces, aligning the different things that you need to do, and then going and executing. So like, is it going to take a while for your first time through? Yeah, it is. It's a new process. It's something new you're going to roll out. But as you get down to like after tactical, to me, these are the quick meetings. And is there a lot of work involved? Absolutely there is. Because to your point, Tommy, you can have and I don't think what comes out of tactical planning is a nebulous idea, right? Mm-hmm. It is, we are going to go build this thing for sales that is going to increase sales by 10%, right? How do we do that? Well, we talk to sales. What are the things that you guys are missing? What are the things that you need? What are the, boom, boom, boom. These are all of a sudden all these solutions that roll into, you know, a key result, right? Or its own mini objective that you're driving towards, because the outcome should be a benefit to the business. Great. We're in the business gathering requirements meeting. And like, it's funny, we haven't talked about the article yet at all. Great. We're in the business like gathering meeting. We now understand, after talking with the conceptual model, we don't have one of these sources. We have to go spend 2+ weeks developing an API. Right. Okay. That's a slowdown. With this one, we have this, you know, problem. Great. That's a slowdown. Boom, boom, boom. Great. And now with this business unit, we have 5 key results or solutions, right? Projects that we've identified through this process that we're going to go build. In totality, it's going to take us 2 months. But incrementally, just because we don't have that connection to the API, we can solve that. Well, not, it's not the end state, but we can solve it because we'll dump it out into an Excel file. We'll plug into it. We'll do this thing. There are so many like quick wins, right? This was the quote in there, whatever, that as long as they're still leading towards the end goal of the full solution, I think is the key part of this, yeah. Right? Where, no, we don't want to go through all this and wait and wait and wait. We want to get value. So how do we get value quickly? And it's the technical team's responsibility to tie that value in with the long-term strategy. And that's where I think this fits in, where when we're talking about solution planning and gathering these requirements, you like the technical folks who are engaging with the business need to keep that in mind and look for opportunities to do that, which also reinforces the whole idea of conceptual, like doing the models as you go along, so that you're looking for areas of opportunity to say, hey, you see this, like, you know, pipeline of how we're going to go build things. We're going to drop one off here and we're going to say, you know, this is the temp fix. We're going to get this out to the business. We're going to vet all the things. It's going to be sound, but we have some tech to follow up with. And then we'll just fix that behind the scenes and they'll never know.
And yeah, the only reason I really pressed on this is we've talked about requirement gatherings a ton in that vacuum and in that detail where it's, if this is where we're in a sense starting. So not to say we can't talk about it more, but when you think about
the content,
we'll continue to talk about requirements gathering. But you think about this context, I think I'm pressing the point, does some of the requirements gathering maybe need to be a little before? Because there's nothing worse than saying, we're going to do these great sales project and goal. Oh, you've never tried. And then in requirements gathering, oh, you don't have that data? Or, oh, it's all 18 access files? Okay, that changes everything now. And we know that too.
But that's my point in terms of starting these conversations without the assumption that I'm going to get good requirements.
Yeah.
Because I may not. And we may have to like choose a different path or put it on hold before we even get down into the nitty gritty of gathering business requirements. Mm-hmm. Because there's this huge assumption that business is ready for you to like go engage with them. And I will tell you what, it is the vast majority of the time, you know.
Yeah.
So there could be.
I like it when people come in to you and walk in with like, here's an Excel sheet I mocked up, and or even just I need data that looks like this, and we literally have a discussion and we're just talking about making a really wide table so you can dump data out and go do things with it. I'm like, I think we're missing the point here. I feel like we're missing the so the number of conversations I've had, like, to your point, Tommy, a lot of the time we like to talk about the insights. What keeps you up at night? What is causing you not to get to your goals that you want to get to? Those are better conversations I feel like to have, because that's actually driving towards like what we need to focus on. And then Seth, to your point, right, we're trying to marry this. We're trying to walk the business along this journey of, you need these things. Do we have the information data to get to it? And this is, I've said this before, it's like building that bridge. You're building it from the report side backwards towards the data, and you're going from the data side forwards towards the report. Do you have the data that supports what you want to see in the report?
Here's a question for you guys, because I love that, because I think that goes into how we prioritize our objectives. I'll pose this question to you. Should the requirements be a weight value towards our objectives? What I mean by that, if we know there's some big hurdles we have to go through, the known unknown, so to speak, and should that be incorporated in what our objectives are going to be? meaning should we do more pre-requirement gathering requirements in the tactical planning?
Oh, this is a great question. I'm going to give you the consulting answer on this one. I do think this depends, right? I think it depends on what some of your objectives are. If you're new in this organization and you're trying to get quick wins, you're probably not going to tackle the hardest problems first. You're going to start with some quick wins that are low hanging fruits that require little effort and just focus on those. Then I think there are also some very long running big rocks to move, right? To your point, we have all of our sales data in a whole handful, a bunch of Access databases. Okay. One, can we figure out how to extract that data in a very non-efficient way right now? But maybe the right solution is we're actually going to go buy a third-party tool that helps us manage customer CRM data, right? We're going to go get another product. That's a bigger play than I'm just going to use what we have today in Access and we'll just make it work for now. So I think that depends on what your main objectives have been. If you're just starting out, you're going to probably deliver those quick wins first, and you're not going to focus on those really big rocks to move until you really know it's a problem. And then someone's going to take that initiative and own it. So there's not a one answer for that. I can't just say yes. Can't say yes, but I think it really depends on what you prioritize as the organization.
Yeah. And I like your point, Tommy. Yeah. I mean, the tactical planning, solution planning, if we're talking about, like, are we discussing something future that we're going to build a backlog of things that we can work on? I hope so, right? Like, initially, if you've never done this before, everything you're talking about is the stuff that you're going to work on, most likely. Mm-hmm. Whereas you want the team that once you get into the cycle of developing or producing enough output to start solution planning and then execution, that team continues to build that backlog so that as you're then solution planning, right, more of those things out, how are we building the right stuff? And these are all the steps and how we make sure we do that. You build up this backlog that you can then schedule in sprints. And like, it's very dev. I think about it in dev terms, but it also is very successful. Like, that's why you have scrums. That's why you have sprints, all the methodologies around executing on a body of work. You know, if the body of work is part of the strategic, the tactical, and we're making headway consistently towards solving the problems of the business, i.e. these objectives, in a timely manner, all of that needs to be planned out, right? I need a roadmap to understand, like, the thing we're talking about, how long do you think that's going to take? How long do you think it's going to take to get through the requirements? And this is where things get really nasty away from dev and technical is how long do you think it's going to take? Well, as we just discussed, it would have taken a week, but now it's going to take a lot more because we don't have this thing that we assumed we were going to have. And that's where I think even in the documentation starts talking about making assumptions is a bad way to, or it's a good way to fail.
Real quick. Is there anything worse than, hey, we're going to work on the sales quota report. Everyone's going to be super excited. And then you have to go back to the stakeholders, go, yeah, we're going to need 5 of your managers involved and we have to buy this other software, but we can still do it, right? Like, there's nothing worse than doing that.
Yeah, wait. I'm sorry. That column we can't extract out of that system because it's what? It won't give us the data?
Yeah.
Huh. And that sucks.
We need all your managers involved. And they got to do a lot of extra input of the data the right way. And oh, by the way, we're going to need to invest all these extra hours that we didn't know when we did our solution planning. There's nothing worse than that. And then you want to talk about something that really depletes the buy-in or sucks the energy out of our projects and solutions is saying we're going to do this great goal. That's what everyone wanted to prioritize. And now you're uncovering rocks and you're looking under rocks and you're going, oh, no one told me about this. No one told me about this. Okay, this is a lot bigger, even though this is everyone's number one goal.
It is a really good point. You know, I mean, especially as you dive into new unfamiliar areas, right? Like say we're going to go attack this thing because it's the biggest area of improvement we have to make. and it makes it through these conversations, and then it gets down to the nitty-gritty where you do find a hard blocker. Mm-hmm. And that jacks with timelines, right?
Adios,
and
what
do you do? Oh man, like it happens. You just try to get out in front of it with the subject matter experts way before we get here.
Because if you're
uncovering unknowns in the nitty gritty, which is where we are right now,
exactly.
Yes, that's disruptive. I'll just say that.
So how do we prevent that?
Well, ideally, the subject matter experts that are part of tactical planning, they would say, like, yeah, great idea. Can't do it. Not until Q3, right? But at the same time, then that's part of pulling the subjective off is, you know, having these things done in order to get whatever the case may be. But maybe it's a new data source connection set up. Maybe it's ingesting data. Maybe it's, you know, whatever. The thing we're saying that is the hard blocker, working towards unblocking that, that's where having those people who understand that business area, you would hope would come out of that higher level conversation before we get here.
But it happens.
I want to point out here. So in that first section, and again, I'm going to kind of try and go back to the article here a little bit here, because I think you guys are saying things that are hitting very good points here. In step one, gathering requirements, there's two important blue box and there's a one in purple. The important one in blue has a couple of phrases in there I really want to highlight based on what you were just talking about, right? Collecting the wrong requirements is a common reason why implementations fail. Agree. And then the other statement there along that is teams get the wrong requirements because they engaged with the wrong stakeholders, potentially like decision makers who provide the top-down requests for the solutions to be built, as opposed to the people actually using the solution, because sometimes those requests differ.
Yeah.
And then engaging business users by using a collaborative approach helps the business design to help you collect better requirements. Another thing they mention here in this last statement here is better requirements lead to more effective development and more robust solutions. I would 100% stand behind that statement and say that is an understated note on top of that. And then the second thing I just want to add here, one more thought here is for some teams, doing a structured requirements gathering, especially in the business, is a large change to what they're used to doing. Yeah. And I also agree with this statement as well, because I've seen a lot of times where they're just like, well, we'll just go to Excel and just go do something. Someone takes it into a vacuum, does it all themselves and say, here's my product, I'm done, right? There's not a lot of collaborative working on the solution. And when you bring structure to something like this, people are like, what is going on? Like,
yeah.
I could just tell you what I wanted and you would just make the table in reports and it would just be emailed to me every day. That's what I want. Well, is that really what we want? And so now we're taking this more structured approach and people are taken back by that a little bit. So really good feedback here. And I think these I've seen in real life happening in this situation.
Yeah, a lot of head nods for sure, which is why they're special notes, I'm guessing, right? It is. It's a big leap, though, because having come from the business side, 100% get it, because you show up, you have your list of things to do, but the vast majority of every day, your day gets consumed by whatever the thing is or things, right? Somebody's asking you to do something. Your boss comes down. He says, I need this. Those are the priorities all the time, right? It's this cycle of I engage. My job is this, doing a bunch of analysis. I'm doing value, providing value to the business. I'm, you know, getting answers here and there, but it's not in any way, shape or form structured like technology sides, like IT sides, right? Hugely structures. Well, why is that structure there? Because the more involved you get in stuff that has to be built, the more error prone it is, right? If we're investing a lot more time and the output is not what we expect, or it's not what we wanted from a value perspective, then you have these big conflicts, right? Ooh. Then there are problems. And then like we get into this like, well, change management, like we ever evolving requirements. And well, we're defining starts and stops. We're telling you what we can execute in a period of time. And I think to your point, Mike, if there's one thing that we've stressed, and I stress too, to the business user is, yes, like the full dev life cycle of sprints and all that is probably a little much. And like, don't try to ram that onto business users. It's a hard fail. But if you don't do any of that, you're not the controller of your time. And then you, like, the result of that is work overload. It's stress. It's you hating your job. It's not understanding the value you bring to the business. It's not like there aren't big things that you're achieving. And this is where there's that balance of think like the business, act like IT. And the IT parts of this are bringing a little structure to your life. And this is like this process that it like it's walking through is more for the BI team-ish, but now we're bringing in BI champions. Now we're bringing in people that are developing reports and they're getting engaged and understand that all of these are requirements, are things you want to do. So we end on the right spot and not like in the wrong one. And it also protects your time because all of this planning also brings into the I think, reality that we're using business users to develop technical solutions. And there is a time box that has to be protected around like what can actually be delivered in these time boxes and make it a pass fail as opposed to what do you mean you didn't develop like all six of the reports that were asked of you in the same week? Yeah. Well, it's completely illogical that somebody would look at you like that and expect it. But if you don't time box things or you don't structure them in some way and you can't communicate the length of time or the estimates behind these things, then the business has no idea like what the expectation should be. They just think something.
Make up one and usually unreasonable.
And right. I'll take that back, Seth, to our conversation about customer service and how do you sell it? Because in this stage, you are selling something. You're trying to sell the ability to extract information for people to be honest when they're sharing with you. There is a critical junction here when you're going into these calls with the business, because you're right. They're not used to these conversations. If you go, okay, well, what do you do? Just kind of walk through your process. There's still a part here where now you're selling them that have to be willing and want to show you their process and want to show you the things that don't work well, because this goes kind of back to the silos and the privacy. Every time they see you, they go, oh, it's him again or her again. We have to now do this, and they're asking me for this. We have to go into these calls with a smile, structure those calls, and say, okay, let's really walk through your process here. We'd love to see how you do it. Tell us your bottlenecks. And they have to be willing and wanting to share the information. And we have to say it in a certain way to get the right information. Because you're right, Mike, you said that too. They go, oh, I have a few Excel files. Well, what do you do with them? And we have to walk through the things that they're probably not proud of too, that the way they're like, they have technical debt. They just don't know it. And they may have their manager on the call to go, no, it works fine. It just, we have a few things. This is a big part of our job to sell the ability to get information.
You made an analogy I'm going to embellish on further.
Okay.
Service industry.
Yeah.
Right. You want to get into the great restaurant. Did you make a reservation? Right? Like these are the requirements. What happens during a reservation? Well, they get the key requirements. What is the party size? What time would you like to show up? Is it a special event?
I like
the analogy.
Do you have children with you? Right? All of these things are not because I care about you or who's showing up. It's so I can prepare to have you have a great experience. What happens when you show up with no reservation and high expectations? Guess what? Sometimes you turn away disappointed, like you not getting a seat, or the wait is too long.
Yes.
You're going to have a 1 hour wait. Yeah.
Bare minimums, right? The business has to operate on it. Like this is how it is. But in the same way, if it's a good restaurant, what do? You train them. They have to show up with reservations because otherwise they're not going to get seated. Otherwise they're not going to get in. So what if somebody wants a report from you? Well, they have to create a ticket and they have to get it estimated so that you can convey the results of like when they can expect their report.
Whoa.
Same principles.
Right? Whoa. You just brought this thing full circle.
We're not fast food anymore. Maybe that's the thing, right?
Whoa. Like
we're not fast food. We just graduated. We're now, you know, Applebee's, where you at least sometimes
have
Applebee's. No.
Don't dare say Olive Garden.
Olive Garden.
My kids would want you to say Olive Garden.
That's what I'm moving companies, my friend. So
hey, we're a popular joint, rocking like Olive Garden all the time.
Ooh, well, wow. I'm gonna hang up now. I'm gonna have to
come. I'll even give you free breadsticks.
I've been to Olive Garden. Angry. I mean, if you work there, I'm gonna stop there. But here's other things you can do.
Well, I like your analogy, Seth, and I think you bring it back really full circle here around, you know, we have not talked anything around this article at all. It's been, we literally got stuck on step one, requirements gathering. There's so much here on this one. There's also some good diagrams and documents. I think we have to wrap it here on this one, and we'll have to come back for some more topics around the other solution panel.
Actually walk through their steps. Business requirements and their technical
steps. This is what we're here for, man.
Yeah,
we didn't even get to planning deployment. That's step two, is plan the deployment. But we haven't even got to that step yet because we're talking about requirements gathering the whole time. But I think the reason why we're talking about this so much is because this is a pain point. This is a hard part of this process. And I think we all resonate with, we've had many different experiences of getting burned on requirements in different ways. And I think this will resonate with our listeners because I think everyone else is going to have the same kind of challenge as they have been burned by requirements. And you thought it was going to take you a week and all these other requirements get thrown on you. And now it takes 2 weeks and now everyone's mad at you and you're working extra hours to try and get this thing out in time because we couldn't have a better conversation around gathering the right requirements. Oh, great topic. All right. With that, any final thoughts, Tommy?
No, I love what you said because go ahead, share this with your boss and say, we're going to do all of this and see how well you can sell that. Or there's all of the conversations we're having, whether we're touching on it, especially today, why it hit such a critical, I think, pressure point for all of us is because we know there's one thing to write it down. It's a whole other thing when you're working with people and time and resources in order to be successful at this. And our focus today on when does requirement gathering get in? When do we actually have these conversations and how is just as important as any part of planning and any part of our objectives.
Seth, any kind of final wrap-up thoughts that you're thinking through?
We're still open for business. We're just now taking reservations.
I like that. We're still open for business, but now we take reservations. I would say in lieu of this one, I think everyone should go get some ice cream scoopers. And now for every meeting, they should open up with a little trick or something when they scoop ice cream. I think Tommy has... I like that one as well. Or if nothing else, offer breadsticks when you have the beginning of your meeting that maybe makes them go well as additionally. Anyways, really good conversation. I think really good stuff here. Requirements gathering is hard. This is another great article around some things you're going to look out for, some things that you're going to run into. I think just knowing that this exists can help people figure out how to do a better job of gathering the right requirements. With that, we really appreciate your ears for this hour of time. You could be doing anything else. You could be, you know, actually doing real work. You could be going on your run with some pleasant music, maybe listening to Enya or whatever you want to do. But you choose to spend your time with us. So we really appreciate it. If you like this podcast episode, if you like what we were talking about here and this resonated with you, let us know in the comments or share your thoughts on Twitter or other social media things, letting other people know that you found this episode engaging and you like the topic here. Tommy, where else can you find the podcast?
We're cheerful and we holler because we got it. Oh, sorry. Wrong one.
Wrong episode. Wrong store.
You can find us on Apple and Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. Make sure to subscribe and leave a rating. It helps us out a ton. Share with 5 people. You never know what happens. If you have a question, idea, or topic that you want us to talk about in a future episode, head over to PowerBI Tips/podcast. Leave your name so we can holler at you in a great question. Join us live every Tuesday and Thursday, 7:30 a.m. Central, and join the conversation on all of Power BI Tips social media channels.
I mean, you could leave someone else's name if you want to get them in trouble. I mean, that's fine too. Yeah. Tommy, why are you asking so many questions on the forum? I don't know how this is working. Right. Anyways, thank you all very much. We really appreciate your time. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next time.